Stephen Huff, that was wonderful. Bravo.
Thank you so much, Susan. Thank you.
That is such a powerful and big piece. I would think it's very demanding both physically and emotionally.
It is, but it's such a wonderful mountain to climb. It's quite thrilling to play from the very first opening chords where, you know, from the bottom of the keyboard to the top of the keyboard, it's like testing the piano out. And, you know, having a wonderful Steinway here, you feel the vibrations under your fingers and ringing. And so it's hard not to get caught up. I've got all that vibration going on in the piano. The orchestra's playing one of the most beautiful tunes ever written. And, you know, what's not to like about that experience? But, of course, it's more than that, isn't it? Because the piece develops into all sorts of interesting areas and becomes very tragically emotional as well. As the second movement, which I think of like very much like Nutcracker music. It's I think of a child opening Christmas presents on Christmas Day, perhaps. And then the middle section is a sort of mystery fairyland of strange lights and weird creatures. And so it's interesting with Tchaikovsky, a couple of things maybe that people don't quite grasp. One is that he loved children. He really loved the company of children, and they loved him. And I think you see that in a lot of the music, there's a searching for a lost innocence in his own life, in the life of childhood, which I find very touching. And the other thing is that his favorite composer was Mozart. So, you know, we think of him as the arch romantic, but he had this vision always in the back of his mind of a classicism, of things that were formal, that were in place, that were measured. And I think that's why his music is so powerful, because it isn't just letting everything hang out. There's a discipline there, there's an innocence there, and that intention with all the emotion and all the passion makes the music so compelling, I think.
How do you approach something like Tchaikovsky's First Piano Concerto? It's such a well-known work, and it is so powerful and has all these different elements. Do you consider the backstory, Tchaikovsky's life? How do you prepare personally?
Well, I've certainly read quite a lot about Tchaikovsky's life and letters and things like that, and that's always very inspiring. I think, I was talking about this just the other day, I think it's one of the skills that you have to have if you're going to be a concert performer is to find the pieces you play endlessly fascinating and fresh. And it's true if you're an actor, it doesn't just have to be a musician. You have to be in a six-month run of a play, and by the end of the run, you're as excited by it as you were at the beginning, and you're finding new things in the character. It's just one of those things. And it's in a way, I suppose, a talent that you can't in a way work on. It's something that you have to have. It's very similar with a teacher. You know, if you're teaching a class on the French Revolution and you've been teaching history for 20 years, you've got to be as excited about it after 20 years as you were in your first year, unless that's not going to communicate to the students and they won't get excited by the subject. And so that's what we have to do. And we stand in the wings. We have to be like a horse ready for the race, and we have to walk on with this incredible treasure in our arms for the audience. And we have to be as thrilled about it as we've ever been.
And the other variable, I suppose, is you're playing it with different orchestras.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that keeps it fresh, because every conductor, every orchestra is going to have a slightly different feel for the piece, a different take. When you have woodwind solos, for instance, they're always going to be different. And Jeff plays the flute opening of the second movement so beautifully. And so that in itself inspires me to play it in a particular way. So all of it is part of this incredibly rich life that, you know, we performers live.
Now, in this age of specialization, you do a lot of other things. You blog for The Telegraph.
Yeah.
And your bio there says, concert pianist, writer of words and music, governor of Royal Ballet Companies, theology, art, poetry, perfume, and puddings.
Right. There's just a few of my interests there. I mean, obviously, playing the piano is central. Very much for me, in a second or central place, is composing. I write a lot of music. But I was just talking to a player in the orchestra today who's from the Colorado Symphony, and they're recording my mass later this year with Andrew Litton, so I'm very excited about that. And words, I write this blog. I've written now 550 or so different little mini essays for them over the last 5 years on all sorts of subjects.
Can I ask you a little bit about your composing?
Yeah.
As a performer, are you drawn to certain repertoire? And then as a composer, are there certain people who influence you?
Actually, the composers that have most influenced me, in that when I hear their music, I feel most stimulated to write. Well, some of them, Janáček would be one, Britten would be another. Poulenc in some ways. There's not really any logic behind that. They're just people that when I hear their music, it makes me want to write. I've recorded Britten, but I don't play any Britten. I don't play the piano concerto, for instance, and Poulenc very little. So, and Janáček, I have made a CD recently of works of his, but he's not central to my performing repertoire. So the two things are quite different. And at one point, I thought I didn't want to write piano music because I didn't want to write for myself. I wanted to write for other instruments, other people. But I have actually weakened because I had a couple of commissions. So I wrote two piano sonatas over the last couple of years, and I'm writing a third now for the Barbican 2015. And I've recorded the first set two sonatas.
Though some people might be surprised that you do so many different things and that you are a concert pianist who plays all over the world and you compose, it sounds, though, that as if you believe that that's kind of important to be engaged in life in all its aspects for your art.
Oh, I think so. I don't think you can live your life in a practice room, really. I think there have to be, you have to spend an awful lot of time in the practice room. And none of this is suggesting being a dilettante or a sort of, well, amateur's not the right word, because I think amateur's a lovely word because it means to love, from amore. So that's not what I mean, really. But yeah, what I think you need to, certainly to play the piano, you need to spend an awful lot of time physically doing it, just like you do if you're playing tennis. You can have a wonderful eye, you can be in good condition, but you need to train. And I think it's the same with any musical instrument. But I think also outside of that, I just want to feel when I come onto the stage to play that there's some sort of communication going on with the audience. I don't mean any kind of lowering of boundaries. I think I quite like the formal aspect of concerts, actually. I don't think that coming out and just chit-chatting with an audience is always the best thing, especially not in a hall of this size. I think there are occasions when it's nice to talk to the audience in that way. But it's the music communicating. It's the sense that people have come to the hall to be uplifted, to be entertained, for all sorts of reasons. And, you know, I come out here, I've traveled a long way from the little village where I was born to play this piece for this audience here in Philadelphia. And so I want to feel that we have a very intimate connection for the 40 minutes that is the length of the piece.